You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Now it's time to hear from the Green Party's Ricardo Menendez March.
As of just yesterday, former Green Party MP Darlene Tanner has been removed from Parliament after the Greens agreed to invoke the waka-jumping legislation at their last general meeting. The removal of Darlene Tanner from Parliament concludes a lengthy saga following her eviction from the Green Party amidst allegations of migrant worker exploitation at her husband's business. Despite invoking the waka-jumping law in the end, the Greens continued to reach out to Tanner and insist that she voluntarily resign. Tanner refused to do so as she still maintains her innocence even after numerous investigations into her involvement in the allegations. For our weekly catch-up, I spoke to Green Party MP Ricardo Menendez March about the removal of Darlene Tanner from Parliament and the party's decision to invoke the waka-jumping legislation. We also talked about recent updates to the three strikes legislation, as well as changes to the Resource Management Act that would restrict the ability of local councils to manage their own freshwater policies. Darlene Tanner's removal from Parliament clearly shows that the majority of Green Party MPs agreed to use the waka-jumping legislation at the party's last general meeting. Is this an outcome you were expecting from your fellow MPs?
Yeah, look, so over 150 delegates who were present at our meeting supported using the party-hopping legislation, particularly acknowledging that we went above and beyond what the legislation prescribed. And they represent thousands and thousands of members across the country who have had multiple discussions on this issue over a series of months.
Additionally, are you pleased with House Speaker Jerry Brownlee's decision to approve the removal of Darlene from Parliament?
Oh, look, I mean, this has been a really long process, and of course we didn't want to be here in the first place, but what we're, I guess, most content about is the fact that we're through this process with our values at the heart of everything we do. And I think this is why we've been steadfast in getting to a conclusion in this process.
Throughout this whole saga, it's been frequently repeated that the Greens have historically opposed using the party-hopping law, but that it was necessary to invoke it given the current circumstances. Are there any changes or amendments that you think should be made to the law so that it can be used in situations like this without stifling independent MPs?
Yeah, and the historic concerns that we've had around the use of the legislation have also revolved around the concentration of power within party leaders when it comes to decisions to expel MPs. This is why in this case we went way above and beyond what the legislation prescribed, and we went out to our thousands of members so that they were the ones holding that mandate. No doubt, going forward, our membership and our caucus will have conversations about any future uses of this legislation and making sure that we reflect on how we have moved through the use of this legislation this year.
Despite invoking the party-hopping law in the end, the Greens co-leaders were still reaching out to Darlene Tanner and requesting that she resign voluntarily. Is it slightly regrettable that the party-hopping law had to be used in the end?
Look, we've always said that the best way to mitigate any collateral damage was for Darlene to resign. And we've got to remember that at the core, this all started because Darlene hadn't been upfront with the co-leaders on extremely serious allegations regarding migrant exploitation. And the independent investigation found that Darlene indeed hadn't been upfront on her knowledge of migrant exploitation going on in her husband's business, which she had been a director of previously. And of course, then following that, we just think that the most honorable thing for Darlene to have done would have been to just straight up resign.
What message do you think Darlene's removal from Parliament sends to both your constituents and your contemporaries in Parliament?
That people want us to focus on the issues that actually matter. Throughout this whole process, I think people have given us the feedback that they want us to be in a place where we're at our strongest to speak on the attacks on our environmental protections, on satiety, on attacks on people living in poverty. And I think the message we have had from constituents and our members is that they wanted us to draw this process to a close so that we can be in the strongest position to push back against this government.
All right, moving on to the next topic. Just yesterday, Associate Justice Minister Nicole McKee announced a series of changes that would be made to the Three Strikes Law. The newly added changes included halving the sentencing threshold for the first strike and making the law retrospective, which would give strikes to thousands of new inmates. What was your initial reaction to the recent changes to the Three Strikes Law?
We know that three strikes type of legislation haven't worked. We know that they particularly will criminalize and incarcerate low-income people. And this is not a solution to issues in relationship to safety. Going down American style overpopulation of a prison system actually keeps no one safe. And the US is a great example of how filling our prisons with people hasn't actually resulted in keeping people safe. I think this is a government that doesn't want to do the hard work of addressing the drivers of crime and would rather lock people up and take the key away without actually doing any of the work that will improve safety.
McKee said that she received feedback from the public saying that the first iterations of the three strikes law were too soft on offenders, which prompted her to introduce amendments. How would you respond to that?
Like, if politicians made changes to law just based on, like, hearsay on the street, I think that would result in pretty messy and terrible legislation. We should be guided by the evidence, and the evidence internationally and locally has shown that filling up our prisons with people as a result of these types of legislation does not result in people being safe. In fact, often when people come out of prison, they're anything but rehabilitated, because prisons are not an environment where people are actually rehabilitated. And so this is why we need to focus on addressing things like poverty, abuse and state care, and education, which are the things that will result in a generation of people growing up experiencing their best potential, basically.
Labour's justice spokesman Duncan Webb has similarly criticised the introduction of the recent changes, but added that they'd been introduced before the Justice Select Committee reported the public consultation on the bill and that the government was subverting the parliamentary process. Do you agree with these sentiments?
I mean, like, this is not a government that has ever cared much for democratic processes or democratic institutions. It's completely on brand with a government that has undermined communities having feedback on legislation, on infrastructure projects. And so this is completely in line with everything else the government has done. But I think at the core, beyond the sort of procedural motions that the government has moved into, because at the end of the day, they could just introduce those amendments at the next stage of the legislation, I think we've got to look at the intent, which is not to make people safer, but actually to simply keep the problem out of sight and out of mind temporarily, to only make issues around safety and justice worse in this country. And again, we've got examples in the US to show that filling up our prisons and not doing the hard work doesn't work.
Moving on to the last topic, the government recently announced that it would amend the Resource Management Act Amendment Bill to restrict council's ability to notify freshwater plans before the gazettal of the replacement National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management. Can I ask you about your opinion on this and your reaction to this information?
Look, we've got a government that keeps talking about how they love localism, and at the end of the day, they actually don't support local communities being the masters of their own future and decisions. And we've seen this in Otago and other parts of the country. This is directly undermining the Otago Regional Council, who've been working actually for years to notify their regional land and water plan, which actually what it would have done is would have set environmental limits for things like fresh water pollution. So this government went against a local council, which is elected by the local community, who was trying to put in place environmental protections. And it just shows this government does not care about localism nor environmental protections either.
Can you tell us about how this announcement will impact the way that councils and farmers handle freshwater management?
Well, effectively, what it will mean is that it will strip away the ability for councils to build their own plans and put in place environmental protections. We know that at the end of the day, this is not a government that has signaled that freshwater protections are a priority, despite whatever empty platitudes may have been said yesterday in the House, because everything else that this government is doing is actually undermining environmental protections and the quality of the fresh water. So effectively what the government has done is stopped a local community, an elected group, from having a fresh water plan that works for them. And this is basically just a heavy-handed central government approach to...
Agriculture Minister Todd McClay has said that the move was necessary to provide farmers with clarity around freshwater management and to minimize inefficiencies for councils. How would you respond to this statement?
That is just simply not true. This is a government that stopped a council who was actually moving to provide certainty by voting on a freshwater plan. And they stopped that the day before the council was about to vote for that plan. This is not about certainty or anything else. It's about a government that simply does not care about environmental protections. And we've got to remember that this is a government that has its back turned away from farmers and everyday farmers and only looking at big agribusiness. A lot of farmers actually do understand the need to ensure that our land is well, because otherwise it undermines their ability to have a productive agricultural sector in the longer term.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.